Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock MBA Podcast. Today's guest is the one and only, a true legend, a hardcore legend in every sense of the word, Danny Diablo, a.k.a. Lord Ezek. You may know him from, his little Twitter beef with the guy from Trapped, or one of 900 million urban legends you may have heard on the Bridge 9 board or something like that, or for his work as an artist with bands like Crown of Thorns and Scarhead as a solo artist and rapper under the name of Danny Diablo. He also did a project with Jamie Josta called Ice Pick. He's got another band called Def Star Inferno that's pretty cool. That's D-E-F-S-T-A-R Inferno. He's got a clothing company. He's been doing some acting. The guy's a workhorse. And he's also made a lot of music that I really like a lot. And that's kind of really what I wanted to focus on in this interview, because I think, you know, the music with him, I think, kind of sometimes gets lost in all the urban legends and the fact that he has such a, you know, entertaining big personality. So we get into some of that stuff, but got to talk about a lot of music stuff that I've been wondering for the past 20 years or so, because I've been a big fan of everything he's done since I first got the Crown of Thorns 12-inch back in 95 or whenever that came out. So we talk about all those artists, talk about kind of the early roots of DMS as a graffiti crew, back when like graffiti and hardcore and metal and punk were all kind of mixed together back then in that era of New York, and kind of what that was like and how that informed who he is and how he's operated, and about some other stuff like me trying to get him on Love and Hip Hop, a Scam Dust reality show. It's as entertaining as you might expect from Danny, but it's also very insightful. You know, he is a thoughtful, sharp guy. He knows how to entertain people, but he's a sharp guy. He's been around the block a little bit, and so we get into that side of things too, which I find really enjoyable. So hopefully you like this one as much as I did. Before we get into it, I wanted to mention a couple ways that you can support the show if you are so inclined. Number one, the best thing you can do is just to share it on social media. Tag me, tag the guest. You know, the platforms don't really do a great job of surfacing shows, so that actually helps us a lot. Other thing you can do is buy some merch if you are so inclined. There's a link to that in the show notes. I got a bunch of stuff that's relatively new and some new stuff coming soon. Or if you really, really like us, you can support us on Patreon. It is because of the people on Patreon that we are able to do the show at all. I pay for this all out of pocket, and it's the folks on Patreon who make that happen. So thank you very much for that. They get every show a week early. There's a members-only Discord that I'm in. I started doing patron-only Q&As. There's also a way to have me review your music or video or artwork or podcast or anything else that you would like me to check out. So if that sounds cool, you can do that at the link in the show notes. We are doing a little co-promotional swap with my good friend Ray Harkin's show, 100 Words or Less. So the object of this ad read is for you to go listen to his podcast, which I sincerely think is great. I've known him for a very long time. I've been on the show, and essentially it is an interview show where he sits down with people from independent culture, records the results of these conversations, and puts them out for you. Some of the people who have been on the show include Will Putney from Fit for an Autopsy and producer extraordinaire, Toby from Emery, Chadwick Johnson of 100th, Joe Taylor from Knucklepuck, and many, many more. You get the idea. If you are into the bands that I talk about on my channel, then you're going to love the kind of stuff that Ray talks about. He is one of those genuinely nice, pleasant people that I have ever known. I really can't say enough good things about Ray. And he's been doing podcasts longer than pretty much anybody I know. So he's put a lot of time into this, and it's a good show. I think you should listen to it, which you can do at the link in the show notes. Or you can go to the podcast platform of your choice and search for 100 Words or Less, the podcast, with your host and my good friend, Ray Harkins. So check out the show, and hopefully you will like it as much as I do. And with that out of the way, let's get into this episode. Danny Diablo, welcome to the podcast. I know you as Ezek, but you are now Danny Diablo.
Yeah.
You've transformed. So, well, tell me, what have you been up to the past couple months? Are you in New York again now? Or where are you at now?
I moved to Jersey City. Oh, okay. I'm in Jersey. So that's what that's called karma for my whole life, for talking back on all the white trash in Jersey City and Jersey. And now I'm living in Jersey. So,
I mean, you lived in Cleveland too. So,
oh God, I lived in Cleveland. I still got a whole bunch of friends out there in Cleveland. And but you know what? I'm on the East Coast. I'm only 12 minutes away from Manhattan. So I'm good. My rent is half the rent it would be in Queens.
Yeah, I lived in Montclair for a little while, so not too far away. Well, so what have you been up to for, you know, obviously nobody's playing any shows. What have you been doing for the past year?
So for the past year, I've just been pushing my clothing line, the New York Hardcore Streetwear. So been doing that. I've been pushing my web store. I've been doing art. I do canvases. This year, I would have been going all over the world with the movie I did called Priceless. And it's a short film, and we won 6 awards.
I saw on your story the other day you were doing some acting, and I don't know if it was a music video or whatever that was.
That was for R.A. the Rugged Man's new video with Kool G Rap.
Oh, wow.
A Master Killer and Ghostface Killer. And I basically came down there. Peter Green and I and Joe Fado were, I was one of Peter Green's henchmen. He was like the mob guy, and I was like his henchman.
Kool G Rap, one of the greatest to ever do it.
The greatest to ever do it. And he's from Queens. And me and G Rap were talking about growing up. We grew up in the same neighborhood, born in the same neighborhood, Corona and Jack's Heights. So it's cool.
Cool. Well, I'll be excited to see that. Well, my first question is, why have you never had a reality show? I feel like you should be on Love and Hip Hop.
So check this out. I'm going to make you laugh. Years ago, Don Caprio, who was my manager at one time, he was supposed to do a big... reality show. It was me, Rick Thorne, Triggs, Chucky from DGAF from West Coast. And it was supposed to be tattooed people. Oh, the Queen Esther. You know, like Chucky's baby mama. It was supposed to be at that tattooed people, like who are like tattooed people and different lifestyles, but we all have families.
Okay.
And then we went to it went to everywhere, and it went to this big I forgot. One company, they picked it up, but then it went right to, they're going to go get it signed by MTV, but they were like, nah, this is too crazy. I was like 2010.
Got it, yeah.
And right now, I was right before this whole pandemic, I was working on a reality show, Danny Diablo's Fantastic Voyage. They were put us into a custom van, like a camper, and we'd go all over the United States. And eventually the whole world, me and Scam Dust as my co-host.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's what I said. Oh, God. so it would have been, and my thing was, we'll go to every city in the city. It'll be for alternative lifestyles, extreme sports, whatever. Just for people like us. So I'll go to the best, and we'll pull in the city, the best record shop for digging in the crates, or the best punk rock venue, or the best skate park. You mean? We go up. Then we go to a show, we play a show, and it would be like, me performing with Scarhead, whatever, and it'll be the new band, the new Jack bands to perform, us, then the old school band. So three. So to show the difference of generations and all that stuff. It's cool. And right now everything's dead, but I'm definitely talking to people about doing that. So I think it would be great, and it would definitely have to be for a channel, you know, that we could curse and talk and make laugh, and it won't be censored. That like, so
I think it could be big. If it doesn't work out, just get on Love and Hip Hop. Get Soulja Boy on there. You and Soulja Boy on Love and Hip Hop. That's what I need to see.
Everyone can say everything about Soulja Boy, but when I watch him speak and he's live, I can't stop laughing.
He's hilarious.
He's insane.
Yeah, but he's brilliant. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. But that's what a lot of these people don't understand about. You understand right now. It's a whole different process when you're working with corporations and working like to get that quota and all that. So people aren't dumb, you know, especially they wouldn't be going that far. I mean, if it's not him, his manager's very smart.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of questions because, you know, I'm a Scarhead and Crown of Thorns super fan. I've been accumulating questions for a good 20 years. So I want to get into some deep shit that people may have not heard about. But first, we got to give them a little bit of what they want. We got to give them a little bit of drama. Tell me about Mr. Trapped. Did anything ever come of that, or did he kind of realize he didn't want that smoke?
Yeah, you know what? This is the crazy thing about people. The trap guy, definitely something is a little, something's loose. People say he's not relevant, but I don't think that is. I think that he was a...
No, he's not well.
Yeah, not well. I'm not a political person, and my thing is like, who I am, but you know, people say I'm in the spotlights kind of, it's so people get change your ways. I understand that if I'm gonna talk to people, but I never was that person. I talk how I feel. I'm not this way, that way. You know, like people get mad. I said something political when I had the whole Capitol thing. I have this one time a thing, and I could not believe the people, what they were saying to me. I was like, yo, it was just a thing. You know, people were like, oh, you stand for the government. I was like, guys, man, I'm not, I don't know what to say to you guys. I'm just telling you how, like, you know, everyone knows the whole Trump thing was crazy and everything. And I know people who were friends of mine and they voted for Trump. And people friend of the dead, and yeah. These people are fighting over stupid shit. I'm like, yo, who cares? Both of those guys' sides, you don't make a difference. You know, people are gonna get voted in no matter what they are. All these companies, all the pharmaceutical companies, all these House of Representatives, they're all being money under the table. So it's whoever has the most money. Stop. It's like
letting them control your life and the way you think is just giving them exactly what they want.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, they get so mad. And I was fighting with dudes who are big bands, and I cannot believe they were like, couldn't see, like, hey, listen, I'd be like, yo, those dudes are Nazis that were in the house. They're like, no, they're anti-war or BLM. I'm like, listen, I don't care what the fuck they were, but those dudes in there had Nazi tattoos.
Right. To be fair, I think a lot of people may, you know, because like you've talked about in some other interviews, you know, Nazis used to be a thing in the scene, and that was a long time ago. So maybe they just don't know what they're looking at. You know what I mean?
Yes, a lot of people don't know. Like, I was really hurt when I saw, like, I got friends who are professors. So they ones like, yo, listen to me. Listen, I'm a street dude. So I got dudes from all over. I got dudes that I used to have beef with, and they were ex Hammer Skins and ex this, like that.
Right.
And those were the ones that showed me the pictures. What's going on?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So don't tell me I don't know. You know what I mean?
Right.
Listen, freedom of speech, but there's repercussions. Do you understand? Right. I always tell people that. You're like, it's like this. People get mad at me, but the United States' freedom of speech means a lot. People have died for that. You mean? Well, it is. It's like also certain things you can't do. Like my girlfriend would be like, no, I can dress the way I want to dress. I can look the way I want to dress. I know it's your body, look at things. But if you're going to tell me you're going to go jogging in Central Park after midnight, you're a fucking moron.
Right. You can do whatever you want, but I'd rather you didn't.
I know what's going to happen to you. Don't say nothing, right? This is the world. You got to be smart. Right. That's all.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of interesting hearing, like, one of my best friends is Israeli. And it's interesting, you know, hearing people, you know, you're Jewish. So to have someone tell you not to worry about it, that there's, you know, Nazis in the White House is a little bit of a different dynamic.
Listen, I'm a proud Jew. It's crazy. I was brought up Orthodox. You know, my mother's Puerto Rican and Jewish, and my father's was a straight Jewish. But I'm saying my mother's Puerto Rican black. You know, so it's like, I'm also mixed too. I'm black and fucking Puerto Rican. I'm Jewish. I got all cultures. So when I say something, it's like, I tell people, I'm like, yo, it's just, it's this common sense. And I don't like that people would get mad at me. And I was like, yo, dude, listen, if I have, they're like, why wouldn't the cops stop me in the riots? I was like, yo, I don't know. I have my own problem of paying my rent. You know what I mean? I belong to a family that you know about. And that's, and we have certain street politics. I mean, even if it's wrong or right, I got to believe in what my people are doing. You know what I mean? So it's beyond that. And when I think when people get older and have, when you're young and you're into punk rock and hardcore, and you're like, you're 16, you have angst, you get, and you're like, defy your parents, I understand. You know, you don't understand. You don't know. You're just mad. You got to get that out. But when you have a relationship and you've been through stuff that grown-ups been through, and you got to pay rent, and you got you have a kid, you understand life is different. So you got to be like, whoa. And a young kid's not going to understand that.
Yeah, a lot of the trivial shit about, you know, record pressings and stuff like that.
Oh, my God,
you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, you know, colored vinyl and all that. Well, let's go back because I have a lot of questions kind of going from the past to the present. So I'm pretty sure that the first thing I got that you were involved with was the Train Yard Blues 12-inch back in 94 or whatever that was, which was not what I was expecting. I thought it was going to be like, you know, Bulldoze, like kind of like...
Like Moron Marsh music, right? Like...
Yeah, which I love that stuff, but...
Yeah, no, me too. I'm saying, like, it's like Terror Zone.
And it's kind of weird, actually. Train Yard Blues is a kind of a weird record.
It's basically Rush with hardcore lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very Rush experimental, but also like in touch with your feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of emo.
It's very emo. It's very very hard. It's so people bug out at me, and that was the first time I ever went to the studio and sang. I never sang before. Never did anything, and I was like, I was dealing with a lot of stuff in my life. My brother just killed himself, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, so I remember writing the lyrics. We would go to the studio, me and Mike DeJohn, Franklin and Demi. I would come home and put the bath on. I make a bath, a hot bath. That sat down.
Bubble bath.
Hot bath. My mother like, yo, what are you doing? It was fucked up because remember, you don't know about this, but my brother killed himself with my father's gun in the bathroom, shot, blew his head out, put it right in his eye. And I remember walking into my house and my father was in the, pushed the door open because I was in Long Island at my ex-girlfriend's house, Anthony for Killing Time, sister's house. And I could have, they told me to come home, but didn't tell me what happened. So I came home and they're like, yo, David killed himself. And I went to the bathroom. My father, with the hardest man in the world, he basically turned around and he's scraping my brother's brains off the floor, off the wall, or Brillo. And I was like, he looked at me. My father never cried, never did anything in his life. He looked at me and goes, why? I walked into my room. I played Disintegration the whole time, over and over, from The Cure. So I played Disintegration and just crying and rocked in my sleep. You mean? It was a snowstorm, a vicious snowstorm of the day, and the body was fucking stuck. My brother's body was stuck in my house for 12 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so deal with that. I had to go outside and bring it out. You know, it was crazy, but you know what? I miss my brother. I love my brother. I don't believe in that suicide thing that he's not in heaven, whatever. He was one of the sweetest guys. I didn't even curse my brother. And he was a great artist. His life was, he took his life, it was too young. And I knew when he killed himself, I knew deep down inside. And I said, come home. I know what they said. I said, what, David killed himself? I knew it. I knew that he wasn't going to be, he wasn't supposed to be on this earth just that long. How weird is that?
Well, I guess that explains a lot about where your head was at when you're making that record.
Yes.
Got it. What do people think of that? Because it seems like it was, I mean, there's really nothing else that sounded like it back then.
You have to understand where I'm from. But the thing that really freaked people out, we would show up to play the shows and they didn't know how we looked. And we were from, you know, Queens, you know?
Yeah.
Mike DeJohn now, the nice yoga and the thing. He was a white trash warrior. He looked like Frankenberry. So he was like all crazy, Astoria Park white trash. And he had a whole white trash crew. So then it was Demi who played, you know, the Greek Demi from over there. So it was great. Then Franklin from Jackson Heights, he was a Korean, but he was dark as hell. So we would show up and people, and we would be like, oh, dressed the way we are. They were like, who are these fucking hip hop kids? Like I walk
in.
And they couldn't understand, like, oh, you know how kids were back then. They're like, oh, he's a wigger. And so I'm like, wigger? Right. What the fuck's a wigger? I'm from Queens. I'm like, fuck. You know, it's this weird thing. You know? And we'd go, and no matter where we went, I know that it was like, especially out of state, that our bouncers used to just be, you know, try to do whatever. And now it's crazy. I would roll with my people, my neighborhood, you know what I mean? So Craig Satari said, I ruined New York hardcore when I brought my neighborhood to the hardcore shows. Shout out to Craig. So, you know, bouncers would be from that town, that little town where they're from, and they would get mad because we had all the girls, we were getting big, where people were loving our music. So by the end of the night, I was like breaking like two bouncers' noses. It was odd, you know?
I mean, I know you guys would play, you know, in central Pennsylvania or something like that. And I can imagine they didn't know what the fuck to think about that in 96 or whatever.
You know, it's funny when I see that, like, all the old Allentown kids out there. We always, I see Jules Jordan, we start laughing. Yeah. They're all fans. Even the white power dudes were like, yo, you were great. So, you know, later on, it's just like people have different ideals and things. And, you know, you respect me when I'm here, and I respect you. And that's it. I'm not saying nothing to you. They'll send it off. You'll say nothing to me. And this is back then, I didn't know, but it's a business. You know,
right.
Touring. And now it's like, now I go on tour. I'm really focused on playing the show, getting my money, selling merch, and leaving the fucking place so I don't get caught up in the stupid.
Yeah. The next thing that I got was the Scarhead EP, the very first one.
Drugs, Money, Sex.
Yeah, it seemed like that was kind of a joke. Is that true?
So basically, they wanted to do some Crown Thorn stuff. I was like, yo, let's do something like with the Scarhead, you know, like with something else. So we went to record these songs, and somehow Jimmy Gestapo gave me like 15 hits of mescaline, but it was in a it was in a Marlboro Newport fucking cigarette of cellophane. And I was like, it was smashed. It was crushed. So I didn't think it would do anything. I don't know my mind back then. I licked the whole fucking bag with me and Bundy Blunt. We were driving around for 2 hours in Jersey to find the Big Blue Meanie back in the day. And we're talking on a fucking payphone. This back in the day.
Right.
He's like 94. We're talking like, yo, we're lost. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm high on mescaline. It's like, you know, the buddy. Also, he'll be like, yes, he's high on, we're all high on mescaline. You know, then we went there and we did our thing. But it was like, it was really cool because, like, on that EP, we got Jimmy from Maxwell Penalty singing Game Is Over, which has, he has one of the best voices in the world. And he was like, his comeback was this guy out of jail. Deep Down was the second vocalist. Basically, Deep had to leave because he couldn't leave the country because he's a Russian and his uncle does things and he's belongs to our family. I haven't seen Deep in 20 years. He just got divorced and now we hang out every day. But it's like, we're laughing. Like, I'm like, yo, you know that you're part of New York hardcore history. And he starts laughing. You know?
It was good, though. Like, it was like, obviously, you guys were having fun with it, but it's a good record.
Yeah. You know what? This is why I say this. Crown of Thorns are for the people who love, like, Gorilla Biscuits, Quicksand, Shift.
Yeah.
Post-hardcore. You know what I'm talking about? And I love Quicksand. It's one of my favorite bands in the world. You know what I mean? But some people like Tool. I'm like, Quicksand is the Tool with like East Coast with balls, you mean?
Yeah.
So, but I'm saying Scarhead is mostly people want to get drunk and fight and get rowdy, right, but sing along, we won't belong, like, oi, we do ska, we do everything together, and it's like anthems, you mean?
Yeah.
Crown Doors is big, and we play it, but sometimes we'll play, and people just, like, stare at you, like, they're really the lyrics and stare, but Scarhead, as I, like, it's like, we'll light up in Europe, like, 5,000 people at one time to go crazy, like Slayer, you know what I mean? So, I love doing both, man. It's both amazing to me. Right?
So, that EP was good, but, like, Kings of Crime took that and was, like, that, but done much, much better. You know, you guys obviously put a lot more effort into it. Really innovative. I think people maybe don't give it the credit it deserves for being just like very musically, you know, experimental and interesting. And like, they're just really good songs. And, you know, you have a big personality. And I feel like that, you know, almost in some ways overshadows the fact that the music is actually really good.
Hey, you know, Finn, thank you so much for saying that. It's like, but it's also, I think that Scarhead, we could do a lot. Like, people that don't like going out of the box. Like this, right. I'm going to say it right now. It's this bands, like, the who are friends of mine, like this bands like Gorilla Biscuits, Madball. They do the same thing. Like, I love them best.
I mean, Madball can't do a ska song. That's just not what Madball does.
They don't venture outside of the box. Well, Scarhead were like, let's try something new. But I thought that it's like, when I did Scarhead and, you know, and when we did the, like, the hip-hop influence line, when I listen to, like, old hip-hop mixed with metal, hardcore, it's always done corny, you know what I mean?
Yes, it's
like,
terrible.
It's like, it looked like there's two different worlds. They don't like each other.
It's usually, like, rock dudes trying to do rap, and it's fucking terrible.
And it was just, like, it just felt like it wasn't organic. So, but when we did it, you know, like, people don't say where I'm from, and where we do, like, growing up in Queens, like, to me, growing up in Queens and getting through life, you could do anything, you know what I mean? So it's like, I've been, people try to kill me like a few times, and it's, and I every time it happened, every time I got stabbed or shot at or whatever, I always knew that I was going to live and do my music. And it's so crazy. I'm not going to be like a Superman, but like, I knew that I have a higher purpose in life. And I know that whenever I'm like, because this music industry, this whole thing, sometimes you're like, but I'm not getting paid like that. I'm going to work construction full time now. Fuck this. And you know, all of a sudden someone hit me up and be like, hey, your music changed my life. I was going to kill myself. And I was like, damn, you must be really fucking low if my music fucking. Right. You must have been on the edge. You know what I mean? But I'm glad I can help you.
Ice Pick saved my life.
Like, you know how it is? Sometimes, Jamie Hatebreed used to manage me. We used to be everywhere together. He was at his all-time low when he managed me. So we would do Ice Pick. He was just crazy. So one time, I was like, I told Hatebreed at Ass Fest. And all of a sudden, I was like, how do you deal with this shit? They're worse than Slayer fans. They're like meathead, and he's drunk, and he's like, now I know why he's like, he's always in shock, his face. James is like, he deal with that shit all the time, you know what I mean?
Well, talk a little bit about where you came from, and I guess in particular, I'll tell you a story, and you can tell me what you think about this. So I went to the tour that was like Obituary and Kiss It Goodbye and Still Suit. In like 96 or 97, I think. And it was all metal people. And me and the girl I was dating at the time were kind of just standing there awkwardly by ourselves. And some guy comes up to us and he's like, hey guys, how's it going? And we're like, who is this guy? And he's like, my name's Manny. I'm in still suit. I just wanted to talk to you guys because you're the only people here that aren't wearing death metal shirts.
Yeah.
And so he was talking to me about, like, I guess he's from Queens or whatever. And he was talking to me about, you know, the old days of DMS as like a graffiti crew and kind of, you know, talking to me about that. Can you kind of tell me about what that was like, you know, and say like the mid to late 80s or whatever, and you know, that combination of like graffiti and punk and hardcore and metal that you just don't really see anymore?
Yeah, listen, in our neighborhood, Jackson Heights, I forget the guy's name, but so we were, DMS started as a graffiti crew. So Dear Oglesby, straight from fucking Dublin, Ireland, started it. So all these people talk about crazy gangs, everything. Yeah. The Irish guy and Scotty Banks, both of them, a black guy, started the crew. So that's how it started. So we're all mixed with Jackson Heights. So we did our thing, me, Hoya, MQ from Corona. We were getting, like, I met those guys in 87 and we became best friends. But the thing is, we're from the neighborhood, me and MQ and write graffiti. And when you write graffiti, it's always against other people because whatever, your friends. And sometimes shit's wrong. You went over by accident. But we were having beef with everybody in Queens. It was like, I remember one time, me and Hoya outside, and all of a sudden I'm standing there, I'm eating a sandwich, pizza, and all of a sudden TA7 guys, the guys I grew up with, came out of the car and they start shooting at me. Bop, 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 what's up, DMS? And I'm standing there, and the Mexican guy is drunk next to me, this drunk Mexican laborers were like drunk in front of me, but they both got shot, and I was like, oh shit. I was still standing there. I was like, yo, man, you're right. I was like, I'm out. I'm not staying here. You know what I'm saying? But shit like that happened all the time to me.
Right.
And a lot of stuff, what we did a lot of stuff. Like, you know, like we're kids. And right now, I was the other day driving, and I saw there was a kid. I'm not even going to say the name, but we had so much beef with these dudes. You know, one of the kids was on the New York Post. He was talking mad shit like, I'm the best crew. Fuck this. Fuck us. Doing. We run this shit. Then he died. Somehow he got hit by a car, and he died. And so we did a mural, and the MQ and Hoyer were like, let's go. And I was like, why? I said, ah, God. So basically, he's there with a gun like this in the mural. So basically, we made the gun into like a balloon, Then we put a bozo nose and a colored afro, like a clown on him. And we wrote Rest in Hell. So shit like that. You know, like, so
How do you feel about that now? That's pretty raw. How do you feel about that now?
Imagine someone do that to my brother, I would fucking kill them. You know what I mean? Like, think about that. But that's part of the game. You know, they're like, they also wrote on Hoya's house. But they didn't know where we lived, so they wrote on all three people's houses. Imagine come out of your house and like, fuck you, DMS. But on right. the neighbors, everyone's gonna, they knew what the neighbors knew was for us, you mean? So,
right.
But you know, this is like, horrible stuff, you know? So it's crazy. That's how crazy it used to get.
Right. Yeah. It's a little different than how graffiti is now. I'm not involved with it anymore, but from what I can tell, it seems like it's a lot more like hipster now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like the shows. When we used to go to shows, anything can happen going from Queens to Lower East Side. Then after the show, coming back home, that's the worst part. You get killed any day. You get killed by the people at the show. You get killed on the way to the train station, and you get killed on the train. You know what I mean?
I went to high school with a couple of the guys who were like in the real early version of BTM, which now I see like BTM and DMS together, and I'm like, wow, I would have never, if you asked me in like 1992, I would have never thought I'd see those two things together.
I went out to the West Coast and started two chapters in the Bay Area and then LA, you know what I mean? So a lot of the guys from LA, like Hale and Charm and these guys, OTR kids, they do business with the BTM kids. You know what I'm saying? Right, so right there, you know where it is.
Yeah.
Paulie, those guys, they're all good kids. Hustle, so like, you know what I mean? It's like Charlie Hustle, all those kids are good. So shout out to BTM kids, you know, and all, we're friends with a lot of people, man. Like, we mingle and we do our thing. I mean, so that people understand that, like, the graffiti, that all brings from a subculture, but it's also like a whole fucking criminal element that fucking people know.
Right? Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, so. I mean, that's, you know, part of the reason, like, I'm not like a street guy, and, you know, with graffiti, it got to a point where I was involved enough with it where it's like, well, if you want to get more involved with this, you need to be a street dude, and that's not me. And this time for me to tap out.
So I got a friend, one of my best friends growing up, my partner in crime, JM, TMS, and we, he used to be a Slayer fan. He's, when I got put down, he got put down. And we used to beef with everyone in the neighborhood. Then one day, they came to his house, and they caught him on the thing and put a gun to his head, and somehow he slipped away. Now he was like, that's it, bro. And now he's a dean at a high school.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
Yeah, so we got dudes with us who are professors in college at NYU, or social workers and lawyers. That's how we do. You know what I mean? And we put the money into our people to do the right thing. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode. One thing that I always thought was interesting about, you know, all you guys is that, you know, if you read the zines and stuff back in the day, Maximum Rock and Roll and whatnot, you know, DMS were like the worst people in the world.
Well, they hated the older guys. They hated the Gnostic Front and those guys. They hated the Dark War.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the smaller zines. Just, you guys just had the worst, you know, reputation in the world. But then I met some of you guys, like when you lived in Cleveland and, you know, Madball would come through and stuff. And I was like, wait a minute, this isn't like, these are like the nicest guys in the world. And I'm sure there's some people that you weren't so nice to, but you know, if you just come up and meet any of you guys, you know, on the street, you guys are the nicest people in the world. And that's when I started to realize, like, oh, I'm being lied to by all these basically, like, I guess I would say, like, insecure nerds.
You can't blame them sometimes. So what else are you going to do? It's like dudes on the internet. It's like, Necro taught me this a long time ago. So this is the first right there. It's funny. Necro taught me something. Right. So Necro, shout out to Necro. He was, one time I was like, I disable my comments on my videos because some of the stuff they say, talk about my dead brother or someone, they say horrible, some Jew, some people even say like, oh, this dude's on meth. I'm like, meth? What the fuck is, no one in New York City does meth? What the fuck is wrong with you? It's the way I talk in my hands. Like, if I do an interview, I'm not gonna be high. If I'm gonna be interviewed, like some interviews that they're smoking weed on tour, whatever. But they don't say it. It's the way I speak. I know I have a New York accent. I sound crazy. But Necro told me is this: people will always hate on you, and the bigger you get, more successful, they will hate more and try to bring you down and try to bait you to say things. And so sometimes people say something. My girl stops me all the time, like, stop, just block them. As a street dude, I'm like, yo, how do you even say that to someone? Like, a lot of these kids never got punched in the face. That's a problem. And to hide behind the thing, it's so bizarre. So Necro goes, listen, how many people have you beat down when you were younger? I was a street guy or whatever. Sure. He goes, how many people knocked out? So I said, I knocked out over 60 people. Okay? He goes like this. He goes, all those people have cousins. How many girls he's banging in the world? They're ex-girlfriends, or the current girlfriend now. So they're mad. So they'll say something. And I was like, oh, shit. He goes, just let it go, man. It's hard for me. It's something I'm trying to work on. But it's hard for me. I got feelings. Train up blues.
That's right. Well, I do think that, you know, on the one hand, when, you know, you guys and Madball and stuff got real big in the 90s, you know, on the one hand, that kind of made a lot of people want to emulate that lifestyle, which, you know, in hindsight, wasn't that cool. It's not your fault, but that kind of sucked. But on the other hand, I think it also kind of introduced an element that a lot of those people needed, which is like, they needed to learn that if you say the wrong thing to the wrong person, you're going to get punched in the face. And you need to learn that that's a part of life. And like, you know, in especially like the 90s hardcore scene, nobody was going to punch you in the face for anything. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everyone could just talk. And then there's people who come along. And I remember this one guy at a show in Cleveland who I won't name, but some kid was yapping to him. And, you know, eventually you could just tell he had enough of him. He's like, oh, if you don't like it, well, fight me. And the kid was like, well, I don't want to do that, so I guess I'm just going to leave. And yeah, I was just learned something.
Yeah, you learned something. You always learn. Listen, I tell people, there's always someone tougher than you, and it's right around the corner, bro. You know what I mean? If you have a problem with someone and it has to escalate to fight, fight a fair one. Then let it break up and so shake hands. That's how I think about it. You know what I mean? But a lot of these people don't do that. Like calling people, like I had people prank my mother's house, call my mother saying stuff. And then they wonder why the EZX stories happen. Like, because I told these guys, that's like over years, I said, I'm going to catch you one day. You keep on doing this, talking to fans. I don't even know who you are. I'm a different breed than you. And when I catch them, you hear what happens. You mean?
Yeah.
I never started fighting in my life. You know, I'm not a bully, you know, ever. I actually, when I was younger, I loved beating down bullies. That was something I used to do. And you see these guys, some of these guys, a lot of these dudes, when they leave the hardcore scene, back in the day, a lot of dudes left the hardcore scene to become ravers. Remember that? That was a weird thing. And now a lot of hardcore guys become bikers and they do their thing. It's just weird. You know, they go a different way. I'm still in the scene. I'm still who I am.
Yeah, it is interesting how that's true. I totally forgot about the ravers. It's true. But, you know, they dress kind of the same, like the VOD kind of look.
VOD at one point was one of the biggest bands on the East Coast. Like he had songs of Homeboy from Pantera. And that, but anything, VOD, like, was hard. We toured them, but the Blood Simple? Was that the second one? That was amazing music to me.
They were great.
I love Blood Simple, his other band. It was like gothic fucking metal. And so it was like, you know, it was cool. There's the slow songs. I like stuff like that, Type of Negative, stuff like that. You mean? So it was cool, you know?
Tim is such a fucking good vocalist, too.
He's God such damn, a good guy, good. Man. He's a good guy.
Yeah. So the next thing, I think, well, you probably had a lot of other things in between, but Ice Pick is the next thing I wanted to ask about, which I think is one of the hardest records of all time. That album was fucking great, but it's really hard to find. Even back then, not that many people knew about it. But you know, you're on a song with Ice-T.
Yeah.
Why is Ice Pick like the lost project, and how did that kind of come about?
At that time, I was signed to Jamie Johnson, and he had so many projects and doing the Stillborn Records. He was going.
This is like 2005-ish.
Six. Yeah, 2005, 2006. I was signed to Travis Barker doing my record, my EP. Then I got signed to Hellcat Records with Tim Armstrong. But when I was doing Ice Pick, it was always at the when Jamie, Hatebreed was so big at that time, was one of the biggest bands in the world. So I had a way to, all his stuff died out, then we could do Ice Pick. And then when we did Ice Pick, it was like, Jamie, shout out to Jamie, I love you, Jamie. But Jamie would be like, I'll be like, you're 4 months. When would you iceberg? Let's do it. Then one day he'll call me. He goes, yeah, drive to the studio in a snowstorm for 5 hours right now. And I'll drive in a snowstorm. And you only have 2 hours to do your vocals. So I did my vocals in 2 hours with Zeus and left it. It was a drive while Jamie did his vocals, like going back and did it. It was crazy. So it was like, it happened like that. He was also doing Kingdom of Sorrow at the same time. So me and Kurt for Crowbar would be at the same, at the stillborn office, and Jamie would leave us, and we would be like, he'd be like, dude, you guys stay here. Me and Kurt would be like, fuck that, let's go get cocaine and go to the strip club, you know what I mean? And he would come into the strip club and grab us like little kids and take us out.
Right.
It was a part of my life that was so insane.
That sounds like a Jamie move.
Yeah, so it was so insane, but you know what? The music was fucking amazing. Jamie's a great, great, great musician, lyricist, and songwriter, and fucking Zeus is one of the best producers.
Yep.
So, well, how can I go wrong? How can we go wrong?
And that was Frank playing guitar in that? Is that right?
It was, no, Wayne.
Oh, it was Wayne. Okay.
Yeah. He was in Hatebreed. He was out.
Oh,
already.
I didn't know that.
No. He started Hatebreed. They kicked him out for a long time. And he went back in after that.
Oh, I didn't know that. There we go. Well, why did that album not get more attention? Because it's so fucking good.
I think that Joshua focuses everything on his breadwinner, which is where you have to, like, people understand that.
And he was doing Headbangers Ball then too.
Yeah, he went straight for, you know, Hatebreed's always a machine and it has to be oiled and ready to go. So he, yeah, it's cool to do that, but he's like, oh, I gotta get back to what the whole, my whole world's about, you know what I mean?
Gotcha. It's not even on Spotify, but that might be good because you probably get canceled for that stuff these days.
I know. Yeah, so, and Ice-T did the song with us, but and I remember I bumped into Ice-T in Pennsylvania, played the show, and it was like after the show, and I was there, Freeway was there, Beanie Siegel, Freeway, and all these people. So he walked into the room, and Beanie Siegel, Freeway, yo, Ice, he goes, hold on 1 second. And he turned around, and he goes, yo, Diablo, and hugged me. And they were bugging. And I had all my kids were all from Queens, all Puerto Rican, they were like, we ran the whole shit. They were bugging, and Ice-T came out, and it was with his wife, and it watched my whole set. And it gave me mad respect. And now I talk all the time, and it's just love. And for me, an OG like that, really like looking to me and know what I'm doing. He's like, I'm like, oh shit, we do the same thing. Like, we rap and we do hard music.
That's true.
Not that many people do that. You know what I mean? We do it. You know what I mean? And I always love Ice-T, man. It's just something that I was really influenced by Ice-T. Like, I'm influenced by Ice-T, Mike Muir, shit like that. You know what I mean? Like that really spoke to me when I was young. Good Cro-Mags, I mean, so I'm happy, bro. I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great record. You gotta, whoever owns that, you gotta get them to put it on Spotify, because
there's Spotify and vinyl. People want the vinyl, or they always ask me, do it on vinyl.
Yeah. That too, yeah. So the other band, which I didn't learn about until I was researching this, but was very good, is Death Star Inferno. What happened with that?
Oh my God. So listen, 3 years I've been working. So Stefan, the old drummer from Kickback. So years ago, like 98, he was, he got my number. He was in the United States. He's German, but Kickback was from France. And he hit me up and he was like, hey, I talked to him. He gave me his number. He goes, I want to call you to do this project. I forgot what it's called, but I said, all right. So he called the house, but I got caught up for an attempted murder charge, and I was locked up for a few weeks. So basically, I never got the phone call, but the people at the Starhead House, 3140, they were like, yo, this guy called, and I forgot about it. Years later, he hits me up in 2018 hits me up.
13 years later or something.
Yes. He flies me out to Miami with me and my lady. He's like, I want to do this thing. I want to work with you. I was like, it was like a weird business thing. Put me up in a Bellagio hotel, whatever. Like, it was dope. You know? So I was like, yo, I'll do it. So we did a demo, we put it out, and now we just did a video like a month ago, and we're putting a video out for Violent by Design. So we're gonna do a video for all three songs that you get. Go to DeathStarInferno.com. Those three songs will have videos this year.
So if you want some heavy shit from Danny,
it's like Machine Head. Well, it's hard. So
it's heavier than that. It's good.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. My girlfriend always says, like, yo, Tesla Inferno is really good. And the thing is crazy, my cadence is like a metal cadence. It's way different than the hardcore. And I'm very proud and happy about this project.
Oh, I'm excited to see the video. Definitely send it to me. I want to check it out.
I got you, brother.
Well, speaking of 3140, I really liked that Scarhead. I guess it's a demo, or I don't know what it was, but those few Scarheads.
2001, A Thug Odyssey.
Did that ever officially come out?
I put it out on myself. When I went on tour, I put it out again with Scarhead stuff. I lived in California on Il Rock on a CD. But the thing is, when we do the Scarhead full length, we're going to do 3140 over again.
Redo it.
Live, yeah. And right now, we're recording right now for Scarhead. And we just finished all the music. And I'm going to Milwaukee on February 8th. To finish the vocals. The name of the EP we're doing on Force 5 Records is called Generators of Violence.
That's a good name.
Yeah, so yeah. So I'm doing that. It's on Force 5 Records. They signed us. The DRP who owns Force 5 Records, he's my manager also. So he's also partnered with me doing my clothing line. So this pandemic really fucking made me, my career, my everything went amazing, and I'm happy. I'm a lot of people couldn't even deal with it. Like, I'm getting work and work, features, videos, you mean? So I'm happy, bro. But Scarhead Record, it's like drugs, money, sex. It's like the EP.
Okay. How many songs is that? Like 4 or 5 songs or something that you guys did back then?
No, we did. It was 3 songs. It was
3 songs. Okay.
3 songs and 2 skits. And we did.
Right. Don't
get, we love Sniffy Low. Chapter on the mirror, baby. We'll probably do that too.
Okay. I thought that was one of the most like creative kind of things to come out of the hardcore scene like ever. I mean, that was just such a, I don't even know how I got those songs, but that was just, because it was like, it was hard to find, but I got them somehow. And I just thought that was one of those like original, cool things to come out of the hardcore scene to this day.
You just made my whole year. You made my whole year because a lot of people don't know about that. And when you hear a story, I can make you laugh right now. So when we did it, I was so proud at the time because I paid for that demo, my own money. I was selling drugs at the time. So, yeah. So I was like, yo, this is some real shit. I flipped it and it was like $2,500 to go to the studio. I was like, I got this myself, guys. I had a BMW. I was like, let's do this. And we had Puerto Rican Mike as my sidekick. And he's, no matter what, he was never on anything on the vocals. Like no matter what people say, Puerto Rican Mike is the best vocalist I ever had next to me in Scarlett.
He's great.
One of the best. He's
so much energy. Yes. He's like so good on stage too. Like so much.
People understand he's like that 24/7. And gets drunk and fucked and crazy. And we fighting stabbings. It was like, it was like bringing the Bronx in the van. So like, it got too much. But I love him. He's amazing. But it was like, so I remember when we went to studio, I was so proud. Adam from Lords of Brooklyn helped us out. But Dean Risper produced it. And Dean Risper, played guitar for Crown Thorns at one time, played right. for Cameron okay. Black.
Because my friend Jesse mixed that. So
yeah, Jesse mixed it with that. What's his band? The famous band.
He did. I mean, he worked with like The Cure and Limp Bizkit and shit. I don't know which one you mean, but I mean,
Jesse's a great guy, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a very good friend of mine.
So when we did the 3140, all those crazy songs, I was so proud. So I'm in the car. I drive up. I see Hoya and Madball on the Lower East Side. And they have their shit. They're Madball at the time. So I was like, oh, let me hear shit. And I was like, oh, shit's dope. So I let them hear the new Scarhead. And Madball was, Hoya was playing bass for us in Europe in 2002. Or 2002. So I was like, listen to the new Scarhead. And they looked at me and they're like, all right. I was like, fuck you guys. Yo, it crushed me. I was like, why are you niggas hating on me? Yo, and I remember driving away with DJ Kais and Puerto Rican Mike, like, yo, fuck those niggas. They were hating on us. But they were our best friends, you know what I mean?
So
I was like, it was so dope that they hated on me.
When I heard that, I was like, wow, this is like the evolution of Murphy's Law to me.
Yo, thank you, bro. I tell people all the time that, in our scene, that there will never be my Jimmy G, Murphy's Law, is the best hardcore band, entertainer. He can sing, But his personality is beyond it. He's like, no one could control a crowd like him. So yeah. I always say, who's the best singer? They're like, of course, HR is one of the best singers in the world. Jimmy Williams, the best, amazing voice. Richie Underdog, amazing voice. Into Another's amazing. Bob Beats from Black Hand Jack, great voice. Those are the guys. And Eddie Leeway, best five in New York hardcore. You mean? Oh, man. It was just so insane. You mean? It's like all of our scene is so much talent, but also so much pain and hurt, and people who got caught on drugs and stuff like that and destroyed their lives. And a lot of them bounced back, but it was like the drugs and the way the wearing your heart in your sleeve really fucked the New York hardcore scene. I always say this, the New York hardcore scene, I say that the reason why I never made it big and the other guys made it big, the New York hardcore curse. And
it's kind of true.
It's true. You can't dispute it. And they get mad at me, these guys. I said, Murphy's Law was on tour with Beast Boys and Fishbone, and it never blew up, right? New York hardcore curse. Quicksand went on tour. Biggest thing in the world, best band in the world, went on tour with the guy from Epitaph, Keep Us Separated.
The Offspring.
Offspring. Never, ever. It's like even Prong, but a big for Queen, John, Tommy, Victor. But they're like, oh, Tom, Prong is opening up for Ozzy tonight. No one cares. You know, it's like Sim is opening up for Kiss, Mass Quick on. No one cares. You know, the kids call you sellout. You know, so it's a curse. Always a New York hardcore curse.
Would you include Biohazard in that, or would you call them like hardcore adjacent? Okay.
No, them too. How big were they? Biohazard was so big. They were touring. What was the biggest metal bands? Pantera, the dudes, everyone loved Biohazard. They're the only band that opened up with Slayer and held their own with Slayer, to me.
Right.
And I
listened to Urban Discipline for the first time in a couple years, and I was like, man, no wonder this band got so much bigger. They're fucking great.
Hard. And that's what everyone was this big, but the New York hardcore curse, like, Mayday, Mayday, it's over.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, following all those bands, you know, through the years and stuff. I feel like maybe around, like, it's like maybe like 96 to 98 or so was like the peak of all those bands, like, from your generation. And they were so much better than everybody else. I mean, how good, like, everybody loves Marauder now, like, and they should, because Marauder is fucking incredible. But nobody outside, I remember Century Media sent me that to review in 96 when it came out. Nobody gave a shit about that album back then.
No. And the guitars were amazing. The drums, they were like, the vocals, his vocals.
It's a masterpiece.
It sounded like Pete Steele for Carnivore, his voice, the first album. It was like, it was, listen, like, I grew up with Jorge. I mean, another, you know, it's like Jorge and I don't really talk anymore, but we grew up together, you mean? So,
yeah.
And we were really close at one time. And the dude, you know, Conker Curse, like, Jorge was supposed to sing for Sepultura before Derek.
Right.
And went out there and he's just, and when they start talking, he's like, "I'll fuck this guy," but he act like a Brooklyn asshole. So they're like, "No, we can't do that." New York hardcore curse. He's like one of the first ones again, and they're like, "Get out of here." So
it's like so much talent, but maybe people who weren't necessarily just didn't come from the background where they knew what to do with that talent when they got the opportunity.
Well, you know, check this out. This is the funny thing. When I moved to LA, I understood why the LA bands and all the punk rock bands, the older guys, Greg Berwitz, went from the Epitaph. I understood why the Vandals, why these guys, no effects, are on, they're dope. You know why they're dope? Because their parents already was part of the music industry or the Hollywood film industry. So they, guys like Sheer Terror, Murphy's Law, Nazi Front, Sick of It All, they all, bands are big. Their parents are fucking work for the sanitation or fucking cop or work in a hospital. Meanwhile, these guys' parents are lawyers for fucking Led Zeppelin or something. So they get the better contracts. Their father's like, I try to outdo the other father. Well, I want to get the best. You know what I mean? So they're already in the business.
If you talk to someone like Jorge or whoever else, like, I'm trying to think of, I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound disrespectful at all, but like, they don't sound... It's the right way to put it. Like,
that's why Sylvester Stallone battled upon
that. Yeah. But you put him in a meeting with a bunch of like slick entertainment industry people and they don't talk the way that those people want you to talk. Let's put it that way.
I'm going to tell you a story right now that made it so crazy. Even if I would take speech lessons and to enunciate my words and speak to like calm and everything. It's still stigmatism with people with me. I remember one time, it's just a true story. So I'm going to tell you, you get the whole thing right now. When I got signed to an Epitaph, I did an International Hulk Hogan Superstar. And I remember that my ex-wife was pregnant with my son. And I was like ready to go on tour. And this is before 2009, I think, whatever. This is when everything was digital. It was starting to go over to digital sales and everything. So I didn't understand what the digital release was different than the physical release. So I didn't understand anything. So I lived a few blocks from Epitaph. So I was like, So no one give me, they fucked everything up on my thing. I don't know what it was. You know, it wasn't Tim Armstrong. Tim Armstrong is a great person, but you know that Tim Armstrong is not sitting there running the label. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. He just has like his imprint, but he's not.
Yeah, he's running. So Tim was like, I couldn't reach Tim. He's on tour. I didn't want to bother him. So I asked the guy, he goes, I don't know. He wouldn't answer my phone. So I went down to Epitaph with the DMS, some of DMS brothers, they're all SAs. You know what I mean? So we went in there. And like 12 of us. You know, just listen. The second I walked in, I was like, "Can I talk to so and so?" You know, everyone at Epitaph was bugging. I had no guns. No, it was just me.
Is that the reaction you wanted, or you?
No. I did what Bob Marley would have done. Bob Marley used to do it all the time. He used to run up to the record label and give him my royalty. So my thing is like, you're not answering my phone calls. I got a pregnant woman yelling at me, what's going on?
Yeah.
I walked in with them and I was like, you guys stay here. I'm going to go sit. But the second, the guy from Converge was there, I think. So he worked there. So the second I went and picked, everyone was hitting the machine for lunch. So I called him outside. I was like, yo, what's up? He's like, I'm sorry. I was like, I'm not mad at you. I just want to know why it didn't work. He goes, I don't know. So this is what happened. The thing I did, Don't You Want Me Baby cover for the Human League. And all of a sudden, we did a big video for it and everything. The video was, we got only $15,000, what's that called, money fronted to us to do a budget.
The advance, yeah.
So when I did the video, it was a big videos were big money back then. So whatever, they said, oh shit, they printed up 15,000 CDs and everything. Human League called up. I said, they didn't like my character. They went cease and desist. So check this out. So imagine, I'm like, first of all, I love the Human League. That hurt me. So I'm like, I'm going to punch this fucking English motherfucker in the face when I see him. So listen, whatever. And the only reason why they did it, and I was like, why are they doing this? Because Human League signed a deal with Swiffer, remember? So how do you have
right,
this guy?
That's right.
Yo, and they were right. I was all crazy looking, whatever, gang member. But the thing is, like, it hurt me so bad. But the lawyers on Epitaph were supposed to make sure everything was good for that thing. So they had to destroy like 15,000 CDs.
Oh man!
No, I went into the garbage and grabbed them all. But so it hurt me. Like, no one told me this. You guys messed up. Like, what happened? Now I couldn't do a video. I had to do another video of Give Me a Chance, which was cool, but take the video for that. It didn't make sense to put it together. You mean like, and it killed the momentum. And I was like, yo, what's going on? You know what Tim did? Tim Armstrong called me up and goes, I'm going to pay for your rent for 3 months. And paid out his own pocket, pay my rent. And, yo, thank you, Tim Armstrong, because a record label would never do that for you. So Tim's a good person, right?
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's why he's Tim.
Yeah. But it hurt me more than anything. That's what, like, when usually like stuff when people get violent or worked up, it hurt me, man. I was like, yo, because I was like, oh man, in my little mind, I was like, yo, this motherfucking Limp Bizkit one did a George Michael Faith. You know what I mean? It got big. Alien Farm did another song, so I was like, oh, I did Don't You Want Me Baby. It was dope. It was amazing, and they can't use it.
I thought they had to give you like a compulsory license. I didn't realize.
Yeah, and also I found out that you can use it in Europe. They dropped the ball. Yeah, like you could do covers and like a suit in Europe. So they could. Yeah, Epitaph was in Europe. You know, they could have dropped in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it just hurt me that no one was on the ball, and they had no more money for me. And I never seen any money from it.
Well, this is the kind of shit that happens behind the scenes all the time that people, you know, don't know about. And, you know, sometimes even like the artists don't know about it. Like, you wouldn't have known about it unless you showed up.
No. And you know what's funny? I went to the Revelation Festival. in California. I walked in, Dave Stein is a good friend of mine, and I walked in, what's up, guys? Anyway, and all was quiet, and like, you know, did you put one of the guys from Epitaph in the trunk? I was like, no, you guys didn't hook it. They all laughed. I said, oh, real funny, guys. I was like, yeah, but it's just a joke. It's like a joke if you know me. Like, I was like, no, you guys are crazy. But it's funny. Yeah. The folklore is crazy in old stories, so it makes you laugh.
People love that stuff. Well, last question for you.
Sure.
From watching these interviews you've done in the past couple of years, it seems like, you know, you're not like a different person or anything, but it does seem like your head is in maybe a little bit of a different place than it used to be.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself heading in the next, you know, 10 years or something like that?
You know what? I did the Ill Rock records, and I pushed a lot of like underground artists. I gave them a platform and a lane to do. Then I did E-Train Records, which I put out Concrete Dream with my label and Don Caprio. And then these guys sound like a POD rap rock, and they're dope. These kids are, and that's cool. You know what I mean, I don't know if I want to do the record label thing anymore, but you know, I'm happy being an artist and on Force 5, which, you know, manager and doing my thing here and there. But I'm really focusing, like you said, I'm going to focus this whole year. I'm writing a movie called St. Mike's Park. And the movie is going to happen. It's going to be like a horror drama thing. But it's different. I'm doing, like, you know how Rob Zombie did the crazy horror movies?
Yeah.
And they kill the people for no reason. You know, like, you know, people love Charles Manson and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not like that guy. Like I don't wear a Charles Manson shirt because he killed people.
He fucking murdered pregnant women.
Murdered. Like, I told Necro one day, why was that was your grandmother that you killed? And I wore a shirt. Oh, he's cool. And so my thing is about, it's going to be halfway real, halfway whatever, but it's going to be about me and my crew. I mean, and it's supposed to be when I'm older and I got to save my niece. And me and my crew, the guys, we go all the way to Virginia and we kill the fucking hillbillies. That's it. So, yes, I'm start doing movies and I'm going to act more. So, and I'm going to do the reality show. So I'm going to do more of, and plus even with my videos and stuff I'm doing this week, I'm doing I have a group called Spick. There's me, Joe Fado. Joe Fado is on Live at the Barbecue with Nas. Him and Nas came out together. He's the first Puerto Rican rapper from Queens. You know what I mean? He's like, you know, Joe Fado. And Big Lito, my boy. These three, we're street guys. We know each other. We have a group called Spick. He's Dominican, Puerto Rican, and Puerto Rican. So we're doing...
I'm not allowed to say the name. You can say the name of it. I can't.
Bags, people in control. Say that. So we're doing...
There we go.
We're doing a video in Philly this weekend. So it's cool. Like, and it's just real straight hip hop, man. I still got my rap style is very hardcore punk influence. And that's what it is. You know what I mean? I don't try to be anything else. I'm what I am. So, but that we're doing that. And that's coming out this year. I got GLD Casket Company, which is me, this guy called Chub Rock.
Oh, okay. I remember him.
Chubby God from Long Island.
Oh, I thought you meant Treat Him Right.
No, Chubby God from Long Island and Lord Jewish. So basically, I take all my stuff, the Wild Innocent, Ice Pick, Starhead, all my stuff, Death Star, and I sample it and make hip-hop beats. So that's
that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, I want to do acting, bro. I want to do the acting more.
I think you should do that. I think that's a good place for you.
I want to be like Vin Diesel and Danny Trejo put together.
I think you can do it.
Thank you, Vin.
Cool. Well, I will let you get on with the rest of your night, but I appreciate it and always happy to help however I can.
Yo, Finn, thank you so much.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King and Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.